This is a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast.
You're listening to the Bite Size Business Breakfast Podcast, best bits from Monday, June the 3rd, our first show in June, and therefore the start of a brand new week, start of a brand new month. Petrol prices very much to the fore. Did they go up? Did they go down? In fact, they came down a little bit, so that was one of the big talkers. Bit of an energy focus for us. Why? Because OPEC Plus also announcing their latest figures, an uptick in the production to be expected here in the region as well. And talking of the region, the great and good of the world of aviation descending on the region, or specifically descending on Dubai, for the IATA AGM and then a World Transport Summit. Tony Douglas was in town. The CEO of Riyadh Air, as his part, is here with the IATA group. And he was kind enough to come into the studio and talk to us about all the exciting things that he's working on with Riyadh Air ahead of their official launch of operations later on this year. Also joining us this morning, Ramesh Kadambi. Ramesh is the Managing Director of Dubai Duty Free. He's the man who's taken over from Colin McLaughlin. But Ramesh knows a thing or two about Duty Free. He's been involved in the organisation for the last 36 years, held a number of senior roles, but came in to share his vision and some of his priorities to hit the floor running as he gets underway. It's basically his first day in the job. Yeah, he took over from June the 1st, but that fell over the weekend. So this was the first working day. And he was kind enough to come and join us live in the studio. So it was very kind of him. Sam McCone also joined us nice and early this morning. He's the managing partner of McCone Properties. He has prompted something of a discussion specifically online, the clever use of his social media channels, where he uses quite often to give people advice about the real estate market here. Everybody looking for indicators of when a market is waning, if a market is wobbling. And Sam was kind enough to share some of his thoughts with us on that. It's all right here on the Bite Size Business Breakfast Podcast.
So, big focus on the aviation industry in Dubai all of this week. I want to get away, I wanna fly away. Yeah. And that is because IATA is hosting its global annual meeting in Dubai. Started yesterday, goes on today, and wraps up tomorrow. This hour, we got a couple of big hitters from the aviation industry joining us in the studio. First up, Tony Douglas joins us. He's the CEO of Riyadh Air. If you're new to the UAE, Tony was for quite a while the CEO of Etihad Airways, the architect really of its turnaround strategy. And on the back of that, he was hired to be the launch CEO of Riyadh Air in Saudi Arabia. He's joining us in the studio in about 15 minutes' time. Any comments or questions on that, do please get them in. Ping us a message, 0487155500. And straight after that, Tom, we're going to be speaking to the new boss of Dubai Duty Free, a different take, a different twist on the aviation industry.
Yep, stay tuned. A little later on this hour, we will be talking to Ramesh. Ramesh Kadambi is the new managing director of Dubai Duty Free. He took over a couple of days ago. June the 1st was the nominal day. Ramesh, long-term servant of Dubai Duty Free. He knows the business inside out. But of course, with the retirement earlier this year of Colin McLaughlin, he will now take over. He joined back in 1988. So as I said, he knows a thing or two about the business.
He knows where the Toblerones are stocked.
He knows where the pantry is.
Any comments again on duty-free sales of Tang, Toblerones, anything else? Get them in for Ramesh, who's here shortly, actually, in about 25-30 minutes' time. So aviation, definitely one of our big themes this morning. Another one is energy. Stop to fill my car up. The car felt good. Three energy stories for the price of one this morning. You've got the OPEC meeting, you've got the Aramco share sale, and as we just heard, filling your car up, we got the UAE petrol price story, Barry.
Yeah, if you filled up this weekend, you will have got quite a nice surprise after, I know it was 4 months of rises. We've had a cut, and it's quite a cut. It's 6%, and that is decent on all grades of petrol, roughly. I'm saying 6%, some 6.2, et cetera, but we'll go for a nice round number. And it includes diesel as well. We've also had the OPEC Plus meeting this weekend, which had a lot of moving parts. Not just one clear decision, but a flotilla of different decisions when it comes to the cuts. Some rolled over to the end of next year, some into Q3 of next year. A different quota for the UAE. We've had ours raised. Jean Walters is a senior economist at Emirates NBD, and she's been putting them in context for us.
Ultimately, the group agreed to extend production cuts from baseline levels until the end of 2025. It is, however, important to note that these cuts are from theoretical production target levels, not current output. At a collective level, the production target for 2025 has been set at 39.7 million barrels per day.
So that's the big OPEC number. Essentially, cuts was the theme, wasn't it?
For longer. Further for longer.
Further for longer. Fine. And then you get the UAE getting an extra 300,000 barrels a day with Oliver Twist in OPEC Plus. Please, sir, can I have some more? Yes, you can. An extra 300,000 barrels a day quotas. Now, these negotiations have been going on for some time now, but it's been rubber stamped from next year. The UAE gets an extra 300,000 barrels a day. We asked John, explain this to us. When everyone else is cutting, why are we getting more?
Looking beyond the aggregate number, the UAE has, however, received a higher production target of just over 3.5 million barrels per day, up from 3.2 million barrels per day. Increases to the UAE's production target will no doubt be welcomed, with the country having invested heavily in production capacity in recent years.
What does it mean for the UAE economy?
Alongside the ministerial agreement on production targets, those countries that are currently making additional voluntary cuts agreed to extend them until the end of September 2024. And then phase production back in over the remainder of the year and into 2025. This means that for the UAE, the target with the voluntary cuts in 2025 then increases to a little over 3.2 million barrels per day.
You reckon we've got how much extra in the coffers as a result of this?
300,000 barrels a day times 81 times 365 is about $9 billion extra next year, which is worth having. But again, it's theoretical, quotas versus actual production. There you go. Those are some of the energy stories we've got this morning. Very quickly on Aramco, the share sale happened and then finished.
It happened in the weekend, Bloomberg reporting that it was covered, so people had picked up the shares within hours. They reckon they've made around the $12 billion mark. It was less than 1% of the company's share capital that was being offered. It's a nice money tree to be able to shake when you need to shake it.
Very much so.
This is the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast, exclusively on DubaiEye1038.com.
Talking aviation now, big week in Dubai. IATA, the global aviation body, holding its global annual general meeting in Dubai. It began yesterday. The great and the good of the industry are here, including Tony Douglas, the chief executive of Riyadh Air, and he's in the studio. Tony, good morning. Thanks for being with us.
Richard, good morning. Great to be in Dubai.
So things got underway last night. Looking at comments from Willie Walsh, who's the global boss of IATA, talking about the big themes this week. And one of them yesterday was his warning, two more years of delays when it comes to buying new aircraft. As the CEO of a launch airline, you're in the market for an awful lot of planes. How big a worry is that?
I think it's a worry for everybody in the industry. You know, I joked with Willie last night. Obviously, he hasn't got any orders, but we have. I certainly have. And I think Boeing and Airbus are taking this very seriously. It's not a problem that will sort itself out anytime soon. But of course, we're a startup. And because we're a startup, we don't have a plan B like everybody else. So we're absolutely eyes on. We've got commitments from both Boeing and Airbus. And we're delighted that we're going to be up and running summer of next year.
So is that going to, you'll have the planes, you'll have the people, you'll have the passengers summer of next year?
So it's going off literally like a fire hydrant in the kingdom at the moment. The energy behind its new national carrier is absolutely palpable. And if ever there was a place that needed it, Richard, it's the kingdom. At the moment, demand far, far outstrips supply. We're nowhere near well enough connected. And the average age of the population is only 29. Biggest population, of course, within the Arabian Peninsula. And it needs global connectivity. So we're moving with real pace now. And as you say, next year, not a long time in the future, we've got every confidence that we'll be up and running.
One of the other themes that Willie and the guys at IATA are looking at is the environment. The industry wants to be net zero by 2050, but comments from Marie Owens-Thompson over the weekend, the chief economist of IATA, said we need a 1,000-fold increase in sustainable aviation fuel if we're going to get anywhere near that. How on earth does the industry get there?
I think actually put the OEM challenges to aside for a moment because they are short-term issues. The environmental sustainability challenge is the one that will be around with us for the generations to come. And there is, of course, no silver bullet to this one. Sustainable aviation fuel, e-fuels and many other derivatives will be the pathway to the solution. But all ideas, be they big or small, will contribute to this. So Riyadh Air, the brand, what does it stand for? An obsessional attention to detail with guest experience. We will be the world's first digitally native airline. But the third pillar to this is we're building in environmental sustainability as a thought leadership objective from the get-go. So we'll be working with everybody to make sure that we can deliver on that promise.
Listeners are going to be listening to this, and inevitably there'll be scepticism saying this is just greenwashing, either by your airline or more broadly the industry. What do you say to them? Convince them that it's not just greenwashing.
Well, I think as a startup, we've got a better chance than most because by definition, we'll start with the world's most modern fleet, with the world's most modern engines. We're working with the national oil company of the kingdom, Aramco, who are putting huge resources into developing sustainable fuels, alternatives in hydrogen, e-fuels. And of course, we do benefit as well from low carbon oil, LCAF. So there's no silver bullet, as I've said before, Richard, but be there no doubt, anybody who doesn't take this seriously will end up in the aviation graveyard.
And in fact, and I saw the airline you used to run, Etihad, in the airline ratings that came out over the weekend, Etihad was number one sustainable, environmentally friendly airline in the world. So I guess things can be done. One issue that wasn't on the agenda a month ago but is now is turbulence, Tony. Is this just a short-term issue and it's just something we've got to live with? Or is climate change going to make turbulence more of an issue going forward?
Well, you mentioned Etihad before and the great work that we all did and continue to do in terms of sustainability. But what we also observed was in the operational tracking of aircraft, as weather patterns continue to change, there are more incidents of turbulence. That's a fact. We see the impacts of global warming all around the world. And that's why, back to the earlier question around environmental sustainability, there's no dodge on that one. However, importantly, we all know that aviation is the safest form of travel, always has been and always will be going forward.
Let's talk about profitability. It's the third of the things that Willie Walsh has got on his agenda. Plane delivery delays, the environment and profitability. The good news for the industry is it's back in profitability last year. The bad news is, even in a good year, profit margin only 2.7%. That is wafer thin. But for some of the Gulf carriers, it's much, much better. Emirates, most recent year, 14% profit margin. Air Arabia did 25% profit margin. That's extraordinary. So are the economics of running an airline in this region fundamentally different to globally with things like tax and unions or not?
Well, obviously, pre-pandemic to post-pandemic, what a difference 3 years makes. Everybody was having a real tough time before the pandemic. And of course, after the pandemic, the huge demand that's come back has seen ticket prices surge. And I think everybody can see the pricing is at the highest in relative terms over the last 20 years. In this part of the world, it's difficult not to make money at the moment. However, of course, that's unlikely to last. Aviation's always been a tough business. Of course, the old cliche joke, if you want to end up a multimillionaire, start off as a billionaire and buy an airline because it's an easy way to lose it if you don't run it properly. And back to many of the carriers within this region, That means we'll always have to stay very focused on all of the cost and making sure that service is excellent.
Do you think ticket prices will stay at these higher levels? Are we at a new normal?
I think it's going to be interesting to see. So as greater capacity comes online, particularly from the Indian subcontinent with what Air India are doing, what Indigo are doing, and over time what Riyadh Air will be doing, that capacity is bound to bring some bring off in terms of pricing. The pricing's unlikely, in my opinion, to stay at this level in anything more than the next 2 or 3 years.
How premium will your pricing be? That's a very good point, Tony. Who are you going to be pitching yourself against?
So we'll be a full service carrier. We're going to make sure we've got an outstanding product because, of course, within this region, there are three great brands, three great carriers with three great products. Inshallah, from summer of next year, there'll be four. And, you know, the brand, the statement we've made, deliveries on the outside, people take a look on the internet. This is a statement of modern Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. And at the end of this month, we'll be releasing our cabin crew fashion at the Paris Fashion Week, the House of Haute Couture. Think Catch Me If You Can, think DiCaprio with a real modern twist. And that's all about bringing beauty and glamour back to aviation.
I saw this over the weekend that you've got a fashion designer based in Paris, Saudi national, designing the uniforms, and you're releasing them at Paris Fashion Week in a couple of weeks. And I thought, is this just a shallow, superficial marketing gimmick, or is this a bold statement of the future and culture of Riyadh Air? I'm torn. Which is it?
Well, it's obviously, Richard, definitely the latter. But let's face it, we've got a population where the average age is 29. It's got the highest iOS Apple usage per capita in the world. So this is a young digital native country. When we ask them what they want, of course they want value. Back to the ticket price question.
You've got 10 seconds left, Tony.
They want great service. But you know what they also want? They want glamour. They want beauty. They want refinement. That's what all attracted us to aviation way back in the day. We'll bring it back to everybody again. Summer of next year.
Tony Douglas, the glamorous and beautiful chief executive of Riyadh Air in Dubai for the IATA meeting. Appreciate your time this morning.
Thanks, Richard.
Catch up on the business headlines with the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast.
Right, let's continue the focus and the theme of all things aviation. Look at it from a number of different angles. We've been talking to CEOs of airlines, but what about the all-important role that duty-free plays? None more so than right here in Dubai. Well, as of the beginning of June the 1st, Dubai Duty-Free is celebrating the appointment of its new managing director, Ramesh Gadambi, who's joined us live here in studio. Ramesh, I was going to say welcome, but you know your way around these studios, like the back of your hand anyway. But welcome with the new title and congratulations on the new appointment.
Thank you very much, Tom and Richard. There's no place I'd rather be this morning on my first day on the job than in the Dubai Eye studio. No, the $2 billion business can wait for a few minutes.
Leave that. It's been running itself quite well recently. Listen, it's under... Look, talking of that business, you know, your history with the business is extraordinary. You joined Dubai Duty Free back in 1988 as head of IT. You've held a number of senior roles since then. You've replaced, of course, George Horan back in 2016. Now, of course, the MD of the organisation. What's changed in that time?
I think the business has changed a lot because it's gotten more complicated over the years as we open new concourses, new terminals. For example, you know, before 2000, 85% of our business came from one concourse, which was in those days, you know, we used to just call it Terminal 1. But now the business is split across multiple concourses. The business is split across 6 or 8 major regions, multiple categories, more employees, and a much more demanding customer base, and a lot of competition, Tom, from both domestic retailers who have really upped the game over the last couple of decades, and from other airports that are important to us in the Indian subcontinent, in Europe, in the Middle East, you know, for example, Doha and other places. So competition from other airports, competition from domestic retailers, and a more complex operation.
Have buying habits changed as well?
I think so. The buying habits, you know, have changed. There's a greater focus, for example, on fashion as opposed to what it was, you know, several years ago. the, you know, boutiques like Louis Vuitton, Cartier, Dior, Chanel, Gucci, you know, they contribute to about 11% of our business. And it was, even as going back to 2018-19, there were 6.5% of our business. So fashion has become more important, and some of the other categories have become less important. The transactions that we see in the lower values, let's say sub 500 dirhams, have reduced a lot. The transactions that we see in the higher tickets have increased a lot, which worries me a bit. So the business is also changing in that sense, and more emphasis on digital marketing. That's an area where we definitely need to do more work as we look ahead.
You mentioned it's your first Monday on the job, normally taking over the beginning of June, but start kicking off in some style, reporting to His Highness Sheikh Ahmed, of course, from now on. I mean, what are you discussing with him? Interesting time for you, especially your major operations down at a DXB with, of course, the long-term plan to move to DWC. What are the sort of immediate plans for you?
So we are looking at it in two different aspects, Tom. The first is to continue to invest in DXB in Dubai Airport, because a lot of our real estate is between 4 to 8 years old. Some of it is more than 8 years old in terms of retail. So renovation, refurbishment, that will be a big focus for the next 2 to 3 years. And on Friday, for example, we have a first meeting on the new airport and the first presentation from DAEP. And we need to keep our eyes on that project, but we need to do both. You know, continue to invest in the retail areas of Dubai Airport and continue to plan for Al Maktoum International Airport.
And of course, keeping an eye on the booming leisure division as well. We've talked a lot about the airports with good reason, but obviously a Dubai duty free with heavy investment into leisure. What's the plans for the village?
At the moment, we just want to keep the two locations going. You know, the total size of the leisure business, Tom, is quite small compared to the retail business. And we own the Jumeirah Creekside Hotel, and we are in discussions with Jumeirah about the renovation of the property. So those things will keep it going. But the main focus will really be the retail business and the development of the retail business at the airport.
You begin work in this new role, as we keep mentioning, this first Monday in the job, as we're coming into the busiest season of the year as well. What the numbers look like for June?
The June looks okay. I was more worried about May. You know, May was extremely soft. I was hoping to come to this interview and say that we are on track for an 8 billion dirham year. We are about 3 million dirhams less than budget this morning at 3.333 billion. So May was particularly soft, and which is a worry. We started seeing the softening in January, and then February was a bit soft, March, April, and we are seeing a spread between the growth in the passenger numbers, the airport being extremely busy, for example, sales softening because people are spending less. So even with the fashion boutiques that I mentioned, for example, in the month of May, our sales were down 11% compared to last year, May. So that is a concern for us. Generally speaking, Tom, we get through the summer and then the business starts to pick up in August, September, October, November, December. So I'm hoping that the same thing happens. But as an operation, we need to really focus. And there's nothing like being below budget to focus your mind.
And it will help with summer holidays, the Eid breaks just around the corner as well. It's going to be a busy airport. And just in terms of that, and obviously focusing on all things aviation, one thing that we're hearing being talked about a lot in aviation at the moment is the impact of the Chinese traveller. Some evidence now that the Chinese travel is picking up again. Is that something you're seeing in sales?
The problem, Tom, is that the travel has 100% picked up. Yeah. In fact, you know, if you take January to May last year versus January to May this year, the number of passengers going to China has doubled, but the spend has only gone up by 25%.
Right.
So the big concern we have is that the Chinese are spending less, the Russians are spending less. With the Indian subcontinent also, we are seeing a drop in spend. And the only region, big region that I would say is slightly ahead is the Middle East, and especially because of Saudi Arabia and Europe. No, Europe is mostly flat. But China is a big concern, not just for us as Dubai Duty Free, but for all the major brands because of the investment they've made in Hainan, in their offshore duty free business, in the domestic business in China. And China is a very big percentage of sales. For us, pre-COVID, China was 17% of our business. Now it is 7% of our business. If the problem was that the Chinese were not traveling, we would be more sanguine about it. But the Chinese are traveling in large numbers, but they're not spending.
30 seconds left with you, yeah. Ramesh. The spend that is going on at the moment, yeah. It's the age-old question to whoever is MD of DDF. What are they spending on? Is it still Toblerones?
No, confectionery is one of the rare positive categories that is up. Perfumes are very strong. Tobacco is very strong. I always say that, smoking kills, but the sale of cigarettes never dies. So those categories are doing well, but some of the other categories are softer.
Ramesh, listen, we can't thank you enough for joining us in. I was going to say sorry, because we should really give you time to get feet under the desk. But you know that desk. Yeah. You've been around it since the late 1980s anyway, so bless you. Thanks so much indeed for joining us. All the best with the new role. Ramesh Kadambi is the, of course, Managing Director of Dubai Duty Free, joining us live here in the studio.
Thank you. Thank you.
Just the highlights. This is the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast.
We were speaking to two property bosses this morning. We've got a bog-off. We're two for one. First one, though, is Sam McCone. He's a managing partner at McCone Properties. We've got him in the studio because of an Instagram reel that he recently posted that got a lot of people talking. He was looking at how to tell when market prices in Dubai are about to start falling. So, Sam, we wanted to know, how do you tell if market prices in Dubai are about to start falling? Good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
So you've got two big indicators that you popped up on social media. I know you do a lot of sort of education-y stuff about the market for people. The first was developers offering great promotions. What kind of promotions?
So if we look back at 2019, when the market wasn't in a great place, you had big developers like Emaar offering 7-year post-handover payment plans for about 75% of the property value, waiving the DLD, which is usually 4% of the purchase price, giving 5 years free service charges. Now, they didn't do that on all their properties, but they did that on the ones that they were struggling to sell. So that's the extent to which these promotions can be.
Okay, and you're saying that's a bit of a red flag?
Well, what I'm saying is that if you look at all the off-plan sales, there's about 7 developers that account for over 50% of all the transactions. So naturally, they're the biggest sellers in the market. And if we start to see those developers struggling to sell their stock, then it's a good indication that things might be turning. And the only way for us to know that they're struggling to sell their stock is that they're looking to do things to make their stock more attractive. And they won't lower their prices because they're quite loyal to their existing client base. So the only way they can do that is by offering these promotions.
I've always wondered about the promotions we used to see, buy this apartment, get a luxury car. Mm. Is that why? Because I always thought, surely people just want a lower purchase price.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. They're looking for any means possible to make their property more attractive, right, to the buyer. But again, if you have one customer that bought at 1 million dirhams and then 2 months later you're trying to sell the same property at 900,000 dirhams, then in a year's time when you're doing a new launch, people will remember that. So they won't play with the prices. What they'll do is look for any incentive extra they can do.
What about distressed off-plan sales? Had breakfast yesterday with someone else in the property market who said the agents were starting to send him news of distressed sales. I went through his phone. I'll read you one. Distressed deal below off plan, below original price. Handover Q1 2025, original price 1.595, selling price 1.53. Not the biggest discount, but is it a worrying trend?
So talking about something slightly different there, this is resale of properties that have already been purchased. It's going to happen. Over the last couple of years, there's been a tremendous amount of people that have bought off plan. A lot of people who do buy off plan don't necessarily look at the payment structure and how they need to forecast their own finances. So you are going to see people that need to liquidate and get rid of those assets. If we start seeing a high number of such distressed deals, then yes, it is a worrying sign. But at the moment, I still feel it's a relatively low percentage.
Okay, well, let's look at your second indicator. You say one of the other things to look out for is when rental properties start sitting on the market for a while. What's a while?
I would say 2 to 3 months. would be an extended period. Why? Because that would be the amount of time that landlords would start to think, okay, a price adjustment could be needed here in order for me to get the property rented. And typically speaking, Dubai's real estate market hovers around a 7% yield. And if we start seeing rental prices drop, then we can start seeing sale prices drop off the back of that for the yields to match.
Okay, I was going to say, how does the rental market, property sitting there for longer, affect the sales market?
Yeah, so rentals are a lot more transient than sale market is. So people move much often in rental markets, and if they feel that the price they're paying for their current rental is too high and there's cheaper stuff in the market, they'll move. So naturally, the rental market will always be at least a few months ahead of the sale market, and that's why I think it's a big indicator to look out for.
So what are you seeing at the moment in terms of the average time it's taking to rent properties? How long are those ads staying up?
Still very quick. I'll give you an anecdotal example. Myself, I'm looking to rent in Umm Sakeem at the moment so that we can be near my son's nursery. We're on a waiting list. We're ready to pay a hell of a lot of money, and we still can't get a villa. So the rental market today is still very, very strong. But again, if you want to see when things might turn, if we see a softening in that market, then it's a good indicator.
You've just actually, though, identified yourself as part of another trend, though. People moving closer to schools and it really mattering where you live for that commute.
For me, it's always been a priority. I don't like spending time in a car. I don't want my son to spend time in a car. So the idea of being right next to a nursery has always been kind of the dream, and that's what we're aiming to do. We just wish we could buy in Umm Sakeem, which we can't because it's non-freehold. So yeah, we're in that boat now.
So where do you think the market is at the moment, Sam, to pull this back to the original conversation? If there's a curve, things go up, things go down, we know. Where are we?
We're definitely at a high point in the market. The big question is whether that will continue to rise or not. I think it can continue to rise if the government can continue to find ways to bring more people to this city. Obviously, things like the Golden Visa, 100% ownership have all worked wonders. If they can continue to do that, I think there's still room for additional price rises. If they start struggling on that front, I think we could start to see a turn in the end of 25, 26.
A turn, a gentle turn, a steep turn?
I think some parts of the market might be steeper than others. Areas that have seen massive increases are more susceptible to bigger drops, whereas other parts of the market that have been more gradual, I think, will be okay.
Sam McCone is the boss, managing partner of McCone Properties, in this morning talking about a couple of indicators to look out for when it comes to the health of the property market.
This is the Bite Size Business Breakfast, exclusively on DubaiEye1038.com. You've been listening to a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. To enjoy lots more from Dubai Eye in the United Arab Emirates, just go to DubaiEye1038.com or find them wherever you normally get your podcasts.